This is Marketing Spice, a podcast by Pimento.
Hello there, I'm Paddy Woods and welcome to Marketing Spice, the podcast from Pimento. Our podcast series is about exploring the latest trends and insights and to provide advice around all aspects of marketing. Today, we're exploring the changing nature of consumer behaviour and how brands need to adapt to these changes. To help explore this world and what it means to brands, I have an awesome panel of guests. Stuart Smith, who is the Managing Director of Mostly Media, a UK top 20 media planning and buying agency, which helps scale businesses at pace. Their clients include Causton Press, Euronics, and Freeprints. We also have Lee Farah. Lee is a marketing consultant who's navigated the choppy waters of startups and scaled high-growth ventures to dizzying heights for over 24 years. Her clients tend to be those seeking growth via above the line, but without the need or capacity to have a full-time member of the team working on this. She's worked for big brands such as T-Mobile to entrepreneurs like Freeprints and Glasses Direct. So I sat down with Stuart and Lee to talk through all things consumer behaviour, and here's what we got. Stuart and Lee, welcome. So this year has been hugely volatile and challenging for all businesses and consumers. Globally, we are seeing rising tensions between people, technology and businesses alongside increasing societal changes. And starting with you, Lee, what are the biggest changes you've seen in consumer engagement and expectations when dealing with brands? And how has this shifted in the last year?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, I think it really has been one of the most challenging sort of periods for all of us. You know, life doesn't really feel normal yet. And I think the core kind of pressure for consumer and brands is obviously anxiety around money and budgets, or lack of it, as the case may be. Yeah, so I think a lot of people's financial safety nets have been stripped away, and really budgets are there for many people right now to cover necessities rather than nice to haves. And that's been a huge challenge for many of the brands that I work with, because a lot of the brands that I work with are products that are nice to haves, you know. So from a consumer perspective, I think it is really all about being able to afford the basics. But equally, from a brand perspective, it's, and I'm sure you'd agree, Stu, it's been like the toughest experience of my career for sure. Like, I think Stu and I and the lovely people at Mostly Media are very much used to working on really innovative deals, last minute deals. And I think for a long time, pretty much everything that we did just worked. Because, you know, we were putting together, or Stu and his team were putting together, you know, some really fab different deals. And I think what I'm finding really challenging is that whilst the budgets are still there to an extent for some of the brands, getting the responses is just so much harder now than it used to be. So I think for me, the brands that have been successful are those that have kind of responded genuinely to it. So a lot of the companies that I work with, I'd say, are now probably medium-sized, but maybe kind of 10 years ago, they were more startups, and they've kind of kept that mentality and really responded to this. So they've looked at really innovative ways to cut costs. They've done different discount structures that benefit them and the customer. Yeah, and I think they've really responded to it, not just in a way that they've just passed the cost on to the customer. And I think also brands that have passed the cost on to the customer, that have been really honest about it, I really loved that. So I get my dog food from this really gorgeous brand called Honey's. They're a small company. They're just a raw food brand. And when they put their costs up, they sent me this really lovely, honest letter. And it wasn't marketing speak. It was just, honestly, this is what's happened. We've tried our hardest not to pass this cost on to you, but now we have to. We've kept it minimal, and this is why. And I really loved that. Like, I thought that worked. It made me feel even more loyal to them than I was already. And I was almost like willing to pick up the extra cost because I really like valued what they'd said. Whereas I think like other brands have perhaps almost like pretended to be there for the customer. So like my car insurance recently doubled, and they sent this email that was like, we understand this is disappointing to you. Give us a call. We'll talk you through it, you know, and we'll tell you why we've increased the cost. And then when I called, the guy on the phone just, he didn't have a clue. Like, he didn't know why the costs had gone up. And he couldn't help at all with the cost of the insurance, other than he'd been told he could give like a flat discount and that was it. And so, yeah, I think like the brands were, they've really tried to rise to the challenge and it's transcended the whole organization. I think that's worked really well. Whereas in the car insurance example, it was just super poor because like the marketing team had developed this really nice email. They hadn't talked to customer services and it was a really bad experience. And I'm generally someone who's really loyal to brands, but I was like, well, I'm just going to go with the person that's going to give me 150 quid off then, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think like honesties and like being genuine right now is a really core part of it.
Stuart, do you want to add anything to this? Because there's some further sort of thoughts, and which is there is a tension between consumers and brands at the moment. And actually, it does feel like you say, Lee, sometimes brands are putting the customer further down the priority list and actually moving away as they try and reduce the quantity or the quality of the food. Everything's getting harder and harder to sort of satisfy the consumer.
There's two sorts of brands, aren't there? So there's transactional and there's aspirational. So I think transactional, it is really hard for a consumer to buy into what they're thinking. So Lee's example of a car insurance, well, nobody wants car insurance. It's not an aspirational thing. You have to have it, and it's a necessary evil. So I think that's always going to be a price game. No one's going to buy into that they care. Whereas taking the dog example, for example, so pet food, that, you know, people's pets are the most important thing to them, probably more important than their partners and their children in our house anyway. And I think you will go that extra mile for something that you're really invested in. So I think there's two schools of thought. I personally can't stand transactional brands that wants a relationship with me, because we're never going to have a relationship. I always remember Coop Pranol doing very, very early social media, and I'm thinking, you're a thing that I put on my fence and I really don't want to, and it's a necessary evil. I don't want a relationship with you in any way whatsoever. I just want you to work.
I think like there's brands like Monzo as well, though, that you could consider kind of transactional, but actually they have like over the last couple of years just introduced so many incredible features, or at least I've only been aware of them for the last couple of years, that have really helped right now in terms of budgeting. Like they've got all their different savings pots and, you know, they've got the money that the interest that they give you every month, and how they allow you to compare that to other brands and so on. So like, I think that is a transactional brand that you like, well, I personally anyway have almost developed like an emotional relationship with, whereas my bank that I've been with since I was a kid, they're really old school. They haven't really introduced anything helpful that I'm aware of anyway, as I have literally no loyalty to them other than I can't be bothered doing anything with it because it's just been there forever.
It's like gas companies, isn't it? I remember working at British Gas and actually not really considering even switching back to British Gas. It was like it was because it was too expensive even with the discount. So as you say, there's the utility side of things, which is it's got to be price first. And then there's actually, as the aspirational gets sort of more important, the customer service has got to get more effective, and sort of that integrity and honesty has got to come into sort of the play into this. So it goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, Lee, which was actually that those businesses that have that startup mentality, even if they're 10 years old and medium-sized, still have a different way of engaging with the consumer, and it's always the consumer first. Whereas these big behemoths, it's more about the shareholder.
So very interesting. So there's been quite a lot of research about the Nationwide rebrand and their advertising campaign. And all the stats are up on emotional engagement and things like that, because their messaging has taken a bit of a swipe at the competition, but they're staying true to their values.
Yeah.
And so the messaging has landed really, really well.
And we'll come on to that in a minute, Stuart. The media side of things, and we're talking the other day though in the press that ITV were talking about the sort of TV market shrinking by about 13% in this year. And so with the tools you've got and these consumer insights that you bring when you go through the media planning and buying side of things, what do you see happening within media in general? And how do you see these changes impacting the strategies and the advice you're giving to clients?
So it's quite an interesting one. The linear TV market is down, but essentially what's happening is people are switching to video on demand. And that, in the main, is your ITVXs, your Sky Go's and your Channel 4 offering. Obviously, you have Netflix, you have Amazon, you have all the streamers that are Disney's and people like that that are chomping at the bit to take a slice of the market. And they are all taking a slice of the market. So essentially what's happening is we are all watching TV still, probably more than ever before, but our choices have changed and how we consume it has changed. In the very short term, how does it affect our planning? Obviously, when I started working with Lee, I could reach, in a daytime TV campaign, I could reach 50% of the population with my eyes shut. It was very, very easy. Now we're probably looking at 30 to 35% of the population for the same money. So we have to be cuter about where we then go and find the other 15% that maybe we're missing. And that's the same with other brands that maybe are running all-time campaigns. I think one of mine for 5 years straight, I achieved nearly 90% coverage. Now I'm lucky if I can get to 75% coverage. So that is a challenge. The other challenge, managing the madness. So there's a lot of PR out there about every new thing that comes to market must be better. So I'm still a big believer that if you invented ITV tomorrow, you'd be hailed as the most successful business person of all time. What we have to do at our end is manage what I call magpieism. So just going after new shiny things, because when I'm working with somebody like Lee, Lee's got very strict KPIs that she has to adhere to and she has to report back to the businesses. And if I can't deliver those, it may look great on everybody's CV, but if we're wasting people's money, it's going to be a very short relationship. So we have to temper what is an obvious decline in traditional media, and it's not just TV, press is bottoming out. We have to temper what we're reading about, and maybe a younger marketing manager coming in and using an echo chamber of what they do to sort of direct where they need to be. And just using the figures, really, using the stats. So out of home is really, really buoyant at the moment. Spend is up, viewership is up because people are out more and more. So that's doing really well. And there's so many amazing routes that you can use on out of home now. Radio is doing better than it ever has before. In fact, radio never seems to dip. It's still your companion in the car. And now we have the sideline of all the podcasts, which give us maybe even a closer relationship with the presenters than we've ever had before on content that we love. So whilst the big traditionals are maybe fragmenting, I don't think they're going away. I think they're just fragmenting. We have some lovely opportunities as well. But at our end, we just have to temper every new shiny thing and make sure that actually it's real and it works.
Yeah, and it's funny, I agree. And actually, one of the things that, Lee, I'm going to come to you about, which is that sustainability, and it's a sort of big drive you see with consumers focusing on sustainability, press focusing on sustainability, government and everything like that. And realistically, what is the importance of the sustainability agenda to the consumer? Because there's lots of noise about it, but we're still seeing a massive growth in fast fashion. There's huge scale of amount of waste in the fashion industry. I think 92 million tons of clothing, new clothing, ends up in landfill per year. So it doesn't seem to really impact the consumer as much as what the press and the government are talking about. So in your view, where actually does the sustainability agenda really fit within the consumers at the moment?
I think in preparation for this, I read a recent study. And I think, as we were talking about earlier, like as people's budgets become tighter, it does seem that sustainability is being pushed further down the kind of priority list. And I had some stats which are 38% of us are very concerned with sustainability versus 59% who are really concerned about the general cost of living. But actually, something that I read about in the same survey, which I find so interesting, is that an almost like unexpected side of the cost of living crisis is that people are almost unintentionally becoming more sustainable. So, you know, I'm sitting here with my hot water bottle and my jumper, you know, rather than put the heating on. Like, I had a meeting with a chief exec yesterday, a video call, and he was sitting there with his big puffer jacket on, you know. So I think we're all thinking about cutting our gas and electricity costs, for example, even if we're not going, oh, I'm doing this to be environmentally friendly. And there's also things like apps like Olio and Oddbox that maybe I'm behind the times, you know, but a couple of years ago, I hadn't even heard of these. Whereas now these are things that my friends are using these, you know, I'm using them. Like, I'm really thinking about food waste now, but I'm thinking about it in terms of cost. Yeah, there is a part of me that's thinking about sustainability, but ultimately right now, my goal is to pay my mortgage, you know? So I'm thinking about it in that perspective. And then, you know, there's things like, I completely agree that fast fashion is still dominant, but, you know, like Oliver Bonus, I love their brand. They launched the other day, a pre-loved collaboration with Reskinned. So that's selling their sort of pre-loved clothes. I think the likes of Zara and Jigsaw are providing kind of options to repair. And then, like, going back to TV, we've got a lot of programming right now, like The Repair Shop and The Great British Sewing Bee. You know, they're all about this trend of make, do, and mend. So I thought that was really interesting when I was reading about the stats, about what people say they care about, that actually they were almost unintentionally becoming more environmentally friendly.
And that sort of plays into the role of Vinted as well.
Yeah.
My wife's massive on Vinted, and it's pre-loved clothes, and it's actually a really good price. And you can, I was talking to Stuart about it, and he didn't realise you could buy even new clothes on there. As you say, it's unintentionally we are becoming more sustainable because of the cost of living crisis. I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it. It's just not in that mindset of being talked about that way.
Yeah. And I think the likes of kind of charity shops, it's cool nowadays, isn't it? Yeah. I talked to my partner's niece the other day and she looked fantastic. And I was like, where do you get your clothes? Because you look fantastic. But you don't, you know, you're not kind of following a particular trend. And she was just explaining that she shops in charity shops, you know, and I think that's kind of wonderful that's become fashionable. Whereas I think when I was younger, it wouldn't have crossed my mind. I would have absolutely, you know, gone to those shops that don't even exist anymore for my fast fashion. Tammy Girl, if anyone's old enough to remember that.
I think the secondhand shops rebranded themselves as Vintage is genius. All of a sudden, they've created this niche. And, you know, Bath, one of the poshest high streets that you're going to find in the country, has four or five Vintage clothes shops.
Yeah.
And they're essentially secondhand shops.
And actually, if those clothes shops, if they buy from Vinted, you can see it, they'll probably make even more money from that. Sorry, I shouldn't commercialise it, but actually, it's a clever way of thinking about it. One of the things, actually, we talked about, sort of the whole increase in sort of outdoor and sort of switching to streaming. There is a huge issue within our industry at the moment, Stuart, and I think it is having an impact on how consumers engage with brands, but it's also impacting how talent is coming into the industry, because I'm talking about creativity, and it's a big, I think, at the moment, I think there's a big challenge with the quality of the creative out there being very underwhelming. I think it's really lacks original thinking, original content, and I think it's having an impact on how brands come across creatively, and they're coming across as quite stale, and actually it doesn't represent the brand in the best possible way. I was talking to my kids, and every time they see an ad, they switch off and say how awful that was. I look at that from a talent perspective and say, actually, we're putting off our own potential next generation of creatives if they are switching off to what we are creating at the moment. I remember I was talking to Stuart about Curry's ad and that beyond expectations, and you got all the Curry's people with beards because they've had 40 days training in the technology. And you're thinking, is that the best we can come up to? Please don't spend 60 seconds watching it because it's not worth it. But Stuart, so from your perspective, what is the impact creativity is having on consumer engagement? And what do you think the longer term impact is going to have?
I think it's massive. So not to be outdone by Lee, I also did my research before we did this. Accelero and Thinkbox launched a study, and creativity is the biggest factor that can affect profitability that you can control. So it can give you up to a 12 times lift in return on investment versus all the other things that you can control, be that which media you choose, be that the media mix, be that the price you're buying it at. If the message doesn't land, you're in trouble. So we don't create commercials at Mostly. We work with great commercial partners. But we were recently given a creative that we had to run for a client. The whole thing went south and we ended up losing the business off the back of what was just dreadful creative. Very expensive creative, but it was dreadful. And the grads in our office saw the ad and immediately knew that it wouldn't work. So for me, I think the strongest creative for me at the moment in the market is actually the We Buy Any Car stuff, where they've used Audion. So again, there's another study which talks about things that you remember. You remember more audio than you remember video. So when you get the two together, it's a perfect message. But the We Buy Any Car stuff where they've reused the soundtrack. And so I bought my car from We Buy Any Car and everyone's dancing around, ticks all the boxes. And my kids sing it. And Paddy, I'm pretty sure if your kids have been exposed to it, they'll sing it and everybody sings it. It's genius. Yeah. I think maybe one of the problems is clients are under massive pressure to produce things cheaply. And they've got to cut costs. So whereas in the past the creativity was valued, now we're also short-term with everything we do. That big cost on the spreadsheet to an FD is very hard to get through. And so what happens is we just go lowest common denominator. And in the end, creative agencies, sadly, can't put their best guys on the business because they can't afford to charge them out. And as a creative or a production company that Lee and I both work with a lot told me the other day, that was the 20th poem they'd seen from a 26-year-old creative director this month. And I think that's the situation we're in. And I think clients are their own worst enemy in the fact that they spend millions and millions and millions of pounds on media and then go cheap on the message. We can see it. You know, I'm very lucky with Lee because we've got a wonderful production partner that Lee plugs into and we know it's going to be brilliant each time. But very often, your heart sinks when you see the creative.
And you wonder how it gets through as well.
Yep.
Actually, talking about this further, Stuart, how do you engage with clients when and you see the creative ad? And do you get a chance to see it further upstream and try and advise them not to do that route? Or
I liken it to being at a wedding, Paddy. Some clients, we sit on the top table and sometimes we get to do a speech and sometimes we sit on the children's table and we're asked not to speak or be heard. You know, we'll just be seen, but we won't be heard. We as media people, obviously, we take the fall for a lot of the results because we're the big spend, right? So the creative for us is so important. And so for a client who engages with us at the top level, that I think they get a much better result because we've sat in many of those meetings and have seen many of the pitfalls before. But I think it, you know, it's horses for courses. Lee's the finest client that we have and she engages us at every stage of the process and it's a pure team effort, whereas other people have different ways of working. But I think a team effort, it generally delivers the best. When you plug into everybody's experiences, you generally deliver the best result.
And actually, Lee, I'm going to switch one, just something you might not have prepared for, but Christmas ads coming through and coming from a marketing consultant perspective, how would you help brands through that Christmas time and sort of supporting and stuff like that? And there's in the press today, just listening to the radio, and they're talking about people are now not buying necessities because they know they've got to pay for Christmas. So people are even cutting back on the necessities of the essentials at the moment, just so they can pay for their family to have a good Christmas. So from a consultant perspective, how do you bring those conversations upstream into your client's mindset?
Yeah, I mean, this Christmas is going to be so interesting. You know, I do have clients that just advertise at Christmas. I have some that have just launched new TV ads. And it's a really nerve-wracking time, you know, because it's considerably more expensive now to make a TV ad than it was 3 years ago. You know, the cost of everything has gone up and that includes making a TV ad. So something that if we're talking a DR ad that would have cost you 40K a few years ago is costing 80, 100K now. And that's a really chunky amount of money, you know, particularly for smaller brands that maybe only are on Christmas, on TV at Christmas. So it's very difficult. And I think in any advertising, what we've been trying to do is balance like an element of creativity, because as you said, it is so important. But equally with our real DR message, and I think price has had to be a really key part of that messaging. And as much as I think many brands would love to do something that is more creative and brand focused right now, a lot of the clients I work with are in the position of wanting to grow their brand awareness now and not just sales. But this year it has had to be going back to an element of DR and an element of pricing, but trying to balance that in a creative way. So still trying to have like either a humor in the ad or you know, an emotional element, but actually there needs to be a price part of that right now too. Which, yeah, as I say, it is difficult because it is all about making your ad stand out from the crowd. I was at my parents yesterday, actually, and they watch very different TV channels to me. And, you know, the ads are terrible that are on. And so to an extent, if you are focusing on daytime TV and you do something a little bit more creative, it is quite easy to stand out right now. But yeah, the ads that I saw yesterday were purely DR price. I could only tell you what one of them was because it's a company I used to work for, so I take great interest in their ads. Other than that, zero memorability of the ads that I saw yesterday.
It's interesting, isn't it? Actually, it's one going back to a previous part of this conversation. We're talking about sort of customer service and customer experience. And if you look at there's a couple now, Octopus Sky on the radio talking about sort of, actually it's old people talking about the service they get from utilities. And it's really showing that actually that sort of human involvement is key. And Accenture did some research that showed 47% of customers feel less valued if they have difficulty talking to someone, a customer service representative. And there's this huge increase in conversational AI and chatbots, which are great for dealing with younger audiences and sort of helping build those stronger relationships with younger audiences. But as you get older, that sort of need changes and they need to talk to people. And recently I've been having sales calls where it's an AI talking to me. And when you challenge them and ask them questions, it reboots and starts again. And you start to get so frustrated by these things. So customer service works really well if it's done properly. But when it starts to let you down, then it gets really irritating and that sort of consumer trust goes. Lee, I'm going to come back to you. In terms of that sort of consumer service and improving the service, what have you been doing or what are you seeing that's really helping? And you talked about Honey and the loyalty and the integrity and honesty coming through. What else do you see that sort of can help improve customer service, actually put customers back at the center of what brands need to be prioritizing?
Yeah, I mean, the brands that I'm working with that are using AI, I'm seeing it mixed with kind of customer services, human customer services agents, and it's working really well. So where I'm seeing AI work well is when it's for the initial sort of query, like, where is my order or what's your order number? So for where is my order at Christmas, that is huge for brands that are just selling at Christmas. You know, the success of Christmas often comes down to, you know, delivery times and where is my order from a customer services perspective. So I am seeing clients that I work with using AI to get through that initial query, because it is really easy for the AI to talk to the, you know, the order system. But then where it's something more complicated, they're passed on to one of the customer services agents. And one brand in particular that I'm working with, they are literally obsessed with their customer services stats and is the AI working better? And if it's not, they're stopping it and, you know, they're working out why it is or isn't working. So I think the brands that are paying attention to that and aren't just automatically using AI just to cut costs, I can really see it working. But yeah, I mean, I think I personally still love to know that I can speak to a human, and I hope that that doesn't go away, although obviously AI is going to become more and more intelligent, so I can see it being used more and more. But I think for a lot of people, like if I think about my parents, for example, speaking to somebody is still so important.
I think the age thing is really important in this conversation. I think there's a generational thing. So we only have to look at our grads in our office, and if the phone rings, they all panic. But they'll happily live in a world of online messaging, and that's the way they've been brought up, and that's what they know. But I've always said this, once you get past 45, which I'll get to in a few years, obviously, all of a sudden you just want things made easy for you and you don't want to have to stress and worry. So what one of our clients actually in the electrical industry, Euronix, their TV ads have just launched and it's all about the customer service. It's all about You'll go into a shop and you'll speak to somebody who knows. And it's not a gimmick. It's not the beards from Curry's. It's you're going to speak to the manager, and the manager knows about all their products because this is what they do and this is what they love and this is their business. But our core audience there is sort of over 50, people who don't want an interaction online. They do.
Yeah.
They're prepared to maybe pay a little bit more to get exactly what they want and know it's all going to happen. And I think as we get older, I think that's quite important, actually.
I'm very conscious of time, so I've just got one final question, Lee, and just going to start with you, which is, this is such a broad subject. If you were to impart one word of wisdom to the listeners, what would you say to help them tackle that current divide I think there is between brands and consumers?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've mentioned this earlier, but for me, I think just honesty right now is really important. I think everybody understands that it's challenging, and I think if you're honest and stick to what you're good at and, you know, don't try and be deceptive, I think that's a really good starting place anyway. Not just jumping on a bandwagon, you know, for the sake of it, kind of really genuinely going, what can I do here to support the customer, therefore support myself honestly, rather than just the car insurance example where you've kind of done something from a marketing perspective, but you don't actually follow it through.
It's like that CSR role, isn't it? Where you sort of... lots of brands jumped on the bandwagon, we're going to do this, but actually never really followed it through their whole business. And Stuart, what about you? Anything last? Final words of wisdom?
The final words of wisdom. Yeah, I tend to agree with Lee on the honesty bit, but I think it's know what you are. So are you transactional? Are you something somebody actually wants? The reality is none of us really want relationships with these things, these people selling us, these snake oil salesmen. And so... I think understanding that at the beginning, when you're infiltrating these people's lives, you're not the most important thing in their world. So we as marketeers all believe that our product is essential and the world will stop. If our product isn't in that person's hand, that's not true. And I think if we come at it from that kind of place, and as Lee says, be truthful, be honest, and then maybe you'll get some acceptance in somebody's life. But most of the things we buy, we don't need. And the world doesn't end if we don't have them.
It's funny. It's how power advertising, yeah. Convincing consumers to buy something they don't need. Sorry, I shouldn't say that, should I? And also, I think actually one last final thought from me is actually media agencies, creative and sort of clients working closer together to make sure that actually the advert that you create or the content you create is going to work and it's going to help your media be more effective. I'll be on that bandwagon. So Lee, Stuart, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks
so much. That was great.
That brings us to the end of this episode of Marketing Spice. And thanks to our guests, Stuart Smith and Lee Farah, who've raised some really interesting points around the subject of the consumer, their behaviour and the impact it's having on brands. There's more about this on the Pimento blog. And if you have any questions about anything you've heard, please do drop us a line anytime through pimento.co.uk. And you can find out more about us on there too. This has been Marketing Spice.
Find out more about the latest trends and insights in marketing at pimento.co.uk.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe. This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.